Everybody, I'm Jerry. I'm an alcoholic.
Jerry.
I get the fun part. I get to introduce Ann. You know, and if we knew that she was going to bring so many people with us tonight, we would have had her speak for the last 5 weeks. Speak five times in a row. And that's kind of a test to, I think, where Ann is. We met, I think, a couple years ago? Four years ago? Wow. And we met, and we kind of had this kind of bond thing going on. And I got to watch Ann grow a lot. She would come in some kind of hurdle that she would come over, and it would be, if you've been around it, if you've sponsored, or if you've had friends in the program and you get to see them grow, it's an amazing thing to see somebody change. And this whole thing is about change, right? And Ann has made the most incredible changes. She's a worker. She's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and a good friend. With that, I'll get to Ann.
Hi, I'm Anna. I'm an alcoholic. I was not nervous until about an hour ago, but I'm like sweating profusely right now. So, my sobriety date is September 7th, 2013. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor other women. I'm so happy to see friends here tonight. Thank you guys for coming. So I guess I will start at the beginning. I grew up in a house with my mom, brother, and dad. I grew up with a father who was a Turkish man, who was a physics professor at Tech for years and years, and in our house, he absolutely ran the roost. Like, he totally, you know, it was his way or the highway. Like, he was very, if you know anything about, like, the Turkish Middle Eastern culture, he was very, like, controlling and domineering, and women were supposed to be subservient to men. You kind of do as you're told. You don't, I mean, like, you did not talk about how you felt. You didn't talk about, you know, you just basically, the only thing that really mattered was like my academic performance and just doing well, you know, like in school and external things. But it never, you know, the question, how are you doing, never came up ever. And we haven't spoken in a long time. Then I have a mother who, you know, she's one of these, my mom, I love her more than life itself. I'm sorry, I'm still nervous. It's going to take me just a second for it to go away. She's like my best friend, and hands down, that woman has seen me through every single minute of my alcoholism. I put that woman through hell. I mean, I feel like with alcoholism and addiction, and it just, you know, I feel like it's been my experience and most people I know's experience that we tend to hurt the ones closest to us, and I put that woman through more than any mother should ever have to go through. But currently now, you know, she is my best friend and I live with her right now. And we have a very good relationship today as a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have a brother who's 3 years older than I am. And he academically followed in my father's footsteps. He got his PhD in chemistry, went on to do postdoc positions, just did very, very well academically. Now, mind you, with that being said, he never drank in his life, never did drugs in his life. He was like the typical nerd in school. And I was the younger one, so I had nothing to follow up, you know. And it's easier sometimes if you have, like, an older brother or sister that did some partying, so your parents are, like, equipped for handling that. That was not the case in my house. So, you know, and we had a very strained, my brother and I had a very strained relationship growing up. Like, we were never close. And again, that's changed thankfully today, thanks to, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. So for me, you know, I've had to tell my story a few times now, and for me, there's like a lot of like the childhood years. Like, I don't have any solid memories of my upbringing. Like, I don't have any solid memories of my childhood at all before middle school. Like, I have flashes of just like, I have moments, I can picture moments of like playing with my little girlfriends in school, but like, I don't have any solid memories of home. I have no idea why that is. That's just been my history. But as long as my working memories, I cannot believe, like, my mouth is what, like, dry. I'm, like, sweating right now. From my earliest memory, you know, it's just, I remember, and I hear speakers, and for so many years I sat in these rooms, and I loved speaker meetings, because I sat and drank and went to meetings and was not sober for years and years, and I loved speaker meetings, because they always gave me a message of hope, and I always identified with every alcoholic speaker in the way they started their story. I absolutely, from my earliest memory, you know, I always felt like my skin didn't fit. I feel like I never measured up, like I wasn't good enough. You know, through my teenage years and adulthood, like, I've been a complete perfectionist and overachiever. But, you know, I always felt like, I always felt, there's certain expressions that I love and I always hear in the rooms. Like, I always felt like my skin didn't fit. Or I always felt like I didn't get the rule book and the hand, you know, book to how to live life. I never felt okay. I never felt happy to be who I was. I never felt right in my own skin, ever. And, you know, it's just my earliest memories were like that. And unfortunately, the thing was, is, you know, I can see now looking back very clearly, like the way that I felt growing up was untreated alcoholism. I can see that very clearly now. But for my early teenage years, I absolutely 195% blamed my father and my upbringing and my household and the dynamics for how I felt on the inside, because I was receiving those messages from him. And because he had such a dominant personality in our household, I did have a lot of the messages of not being good enough, not quite measuring up. So all that did is it just validated these feelings that I already felt about myself to begin with. The problem was is that I developed such a deep hatred and resentment towards him. You know, and in my eyes, like he, like my father was like, I carried so much resentment and hatred towards him. You know, he was never physically abusive, but the dynamics in my household, it was like you were constantly walking on eggshells. And I don't like to, you know, I've told my story a few times now, and I remember the first time I told it, it was at Fifth Tradition for the 15 minute, and I just, I felt this deep, incessant need to make you people understand my daddy issues so you could understand the depths and complexities of my alcoholism. And now that's kind of laughable. I mean, it really had a very huge impact on my life. You know, so by 12, 13 years old, you know, I came into this world, and again, my first working memories of was just like this little girl that I felt like I was never enough. I couldn't stand being my, like, I just had no self-worth. I just constantly was depressed, anxious, scared, fearful. That's just how I felt 24/7. And a lot of people, too, when I hear their stories, can remember vividly their first drink. I don't. Like, I don't remember. I can't tell you, like, the exact moment that I, you know, like, discovered alcohol and had my first drink and, like, what, you know, specifically happened that night. But I know I was around age, again, a lot of my story, I just have really bad memory loss. I just gaps, huge gaps of time that I don't remember. But around age 14, you know, so, again, just going back to just kind of that dynamic in the household, feeling the way I felt all the time, too, I also felt along with that, I knew in my heart, like, I had this need to rebel. I just, this overwhelming sense of the second I'm old enough, I want out of this house, I'm going to do whatever the heck I want, and nobody's going to tell me what to do anymore. You know, I felt like I was living under this thumb in this little glass fishbowl. And when I discovered drinking, I mean, you know, I got wasted, completely wasted the first time I drank. You know, and to me, that's what all my drinking ever was, is I wanted to get annihilated as much as I possibly could. And I remember the feelings of when I first, like, took a drink. You know, that night, the first night I drank, like, I got totally wasted, got into a blackout. I know I was sick the next day. It was at some little high school party. Again, as far as specifics, I couldn't tell you. I don't know. But I do remember how it made me feel. It quieted that noise in my head. Just that constantly, there's that internal dis-ease that I had carried with me my whole life. The second I took a drink, the voices in my head quieted. Like, I became, again, you know, I hear people say I got a little taller and prettier and cuter. All that stuff happened, but it was more than that for me. I felt okay in my own skin. For the first time in my life, when I first took a drink, I remember very vividly, I felt like I could breathe for the first time ever. And I just remember, like, wanting to chase that feeling as much as I possibly could for the rest of my life. You know, I fell in love with it. I mean, like I said, I've been meeting with a few sponsees recently. We've been going through the first part of the book, and there's a part in the book that describes the moderate drinker, hard drinker, and alcoholic. And it's almost laughable because, you know, in my drinking career, it is very clear to me, I was never a moderate drinker or a hard drinker. I was an alcoholic from the get-go. Like, I drank alcoholically and did drugs or whatever I did alcoholically from, you know, age 14 on. And so around that age, I started drinking. And again, I kind of did it more like, you know, kids in high school, you know, just this sneaking around kind of thing. But by the age 15, I started hanging out with an older crowd. And this This carried through my drinking and using. I had an arsenal of fake IDs back when I was 15, and I hung out with an older crowd that I started going to like bars and clubs and going out in Buckhead like all weekend long, like at age 15 and 16, like every single weekend. Like I became very, very quickly, I absolutely became addicted to alcohol and the feeling and the relief that that gave me. But very young, I became very addicted to the partying lifestyle. I absolutely fed and loved the energy of the nightlife, the bars, the dressing up like a hoochie mama and getting attention from guys. I mean, just everything about that lifestyle, I loved. I completely went wild, just wild, like young, real young. And you know, all the other little girls and people in high school and stuff were doing normal high school type things. And I was off, you know, just at a very young age, I learned to lead this like double life where, you know, I remember like, you know, and again, when you're like 15, 16, at this point, my parents were divorced. My parents, you know, my dad left, early teens, somewhere around that time. So it was just my mom and I in the house. And again, even back at that age, I loved my mom more than life itself, but I absolutely used that love and manipulated and lied to her. And I would tell her I was like spending the night or the weekend at my little girlfriend's house, and I would stay up and out all night long till the sun came up and be dropped off at my house at like 7 a.m., change out of my little hoochie mama clothes into some like night clothes in my friend's car and go in and just say, oh, mama, I just woke up early, you know, and then like go home and go to sleep. I mean, that's how I lived my life, you know? I was just wild. I was nuts. I mean, just nuts. You know, but with that being said, at a very early age, I started having a lot of external consequences as a result of my drinking. By the age 17, from the age 17 to 22 years old, I got 4 DUIs. I overdosed in the hospital on alcohol and other stuff 5 or 6 times. I was sent to treatment after every single DUI because my parents thought that would look good for the judge. But during this whole time, like just really bad stuff kept happening. I kept waking up next to somebody I didn't know. I would just act crazy. And, you know, again, I was blacking out at this point that young pretty much every time I drank. Like, I mean, through teens, early 20s, I was a, you know, blackout drinker. I was binge drinking, going out partying about 3 or 4 days a week at this point. I wasn't drinking at home alone every day. You know, as it progressed, which I did do a lot. But back then, there was all these external consequences that were happening. And, sorry, my mouth is so dry. You know, I mean, like I said, I literally went nuts. Just for years, for a period. I did whatever I wanted to do. I didn't care. I lived my life like there was no consequences to my actions. And, you know, I can look back so clearly and everybody in my life at those early ages, like all my little friends when I was in my late teens, like I went to UGA during that time too, from like 18 to 22. Of course, that was like my top choice of schools because Athens is a huge party town, tons of fun, awesome, you know. And when I moved to school there, again, just went even more wild. But everybody in my life at these earlier years in my late teens and early 20s, was just like, Anne, like, what is wrong with you? Like, I was the only girl that was ending up in hospitals and getting arrested and all these bad things were happening too. And everybody in my life was like, what is wrong with you? Like, why can't you see like what you're doing to yourself and who, like, you're hurting people? And you know, through all those early years, the idea of actually quitting drinking or changing my behavior or owning up for my actions and actually, you know, paying my consequences for the things I did, I just would shut those people out of my life. I would just switch friends. I became very good at, you know, I would make a fool of myself over here to this group of people. I just got new friends. I just switched the playgrounds, playmates a lot, you know. And I just, what ended up happening too is, with that being said, the quality of my friends, you know, I started, you know, I had like good girls I hung out with in high school, you know, and then that's changed down to just hanging out more with like the drug dealers and stuff. You know, I started, and that was another thing too, very early on, I only wanted to be with people that drank and partied like I did. Because, I mean, I had that type of attitude too. I remember very clearly at UGA, I had really good friends. I've always been able to make friends, you know, girlfriends easily, but I would make fun of the ones that didn't drink like I did. I would go out and like, I would have like friends that I would make fun of them. I mean, it's just my mentality was so self-absorbed, so just consumed with me, myself, and I and my addiction, and my making me feel better in any way that I possibly could. And anybody that stood in the way of that, you know, I just cut out of my life. You know, so like I said, so I went through those earlier years. I just tons of external consequences happened. I absolutely did not, for example, like my second DUI, my parents, I went to treatment, I followed along and kept clean for 30 days. I went to the little AA meetings. At this point too, I'm about to get to that, but I was introduced to AA by age 18. And it began a long period of over 10 years of just drinking and going to meetings. I hear a lot of people say, oh, well, I've been in and out a lot, or oh, I picked up a lot of white chips. I never picked up white chips. I just continued to go to meetings several days a week for 10 full years. I was never sober. I never had any periods of sobriety and then just like relapse and come in and pick up a white chip. I just drank and went to meetings for a very long time because for the first 5 years, I really wouldn't recommend this. By the way, this path, I mean, I caused myself a lot of years of pain and a lot of years of misery sitting in these rooms believing that this program didn't work, and I never got a sponsor and I never worked the steps. You know, and I never got connected to a God that is the most important, essential component of my life today. You know, so through, what I was saying, just back up a second. Like, for example, a good example of my irresponsibility. My second DUI, I was convicted for, went to treatment, and I like got my license suspended. You know, I had to, you know, probation, community service, just the usual stuff. I went back to Athens. My parents let me go back there, and I just continued to drive. I continued to just do everything I wanted to do, like without it. Like I didn't even miss a beat. I didn't even stop to think like, hey, maybe I should like not drink and drive anymore, or drive because I don't have a license. And I did every single day anyway because I felt like it. You know. So again, my behavior, and again through those years, just the years of going out and partying, I also, again, I started hanging out with a group in Atlanta. Again, everyone was older. There was like a lot of, I started getting mixed up in a different type of lifestyle too. A lot of people, like there were UFC fighters and the girls were strippers, and we would have these like weekend long parties, and it was like swinging stuff. I mean, I just did whatever I wanted. But here's the thing too, like with that being said, I became very, very good at, I had my Atlanta life and that party life over here. I had my drinking friends and, you know, the friends I would go out and party with in Athens, but nobody ever knew the whole story. I had so many different groups of friends, and I would do this type, you know, again, drinking hands down has always been my number one, but like I would just do this type of stuff over here, and then this group never knew about that stuff. And, you know, and again, with that being said, I would make a complete butt of myself over here getting too wasted one night, and then I would just avoid them for like a month and go over here and hang out with these guys. I continued this behavior, so, you know, nobody knew the whole story ever, you know. So by age 22, again, just living my life like that, just not caring about, you know, any consequences, you know, at age 22 at this point, it was like the summer of 2006, and I had just gotten arrested for my third and fourth DUI. And at this point, my parents, my dad and I were still speaking at this point. I was 22. At this point, they obviously pulled me out of UGA, and I moved home with my mom. And at that point, everything changed. You know, at this point, again, you can't run around living your life like I was, thinking that, I mean, life doesn't work like that. You can't just run around acting like your actions don't have consequences. And basically what happened is stuff hit the fan, you know, at that time. My parents pulled me out of school. And, you know, I went through, I mean, I had the book handed to me with the legal consequences. I mean, you cannot be 22 years old with four DUIs, running around doing all the things I was doing. I was failing drug screens for probation, left and right, just being a mess, just a mess. And so I moved home with my mom, and I had to start facing the legal stuff. And that began a period, I would say from about age 22 to 25, of, it was rough. It was extremely rough. I mean, I was in and out of jail a lot. I did collectively probably 6 months, mainly in DeKalb County. Two of my DUIs were there. I did like 2 years in DUI court. Should have been a year-long program, by the way. But I was, again, all this, I went and did hundreds of hours of community service, probation, fines. The amount of money that was spent on my DUIs, you could buy a house with. Like, my parents have politely let me know that a lot over the years. You know, again, so all these, you know, I got I went, you know, I got the consequences caught up. Let's just put it that way. You know, and during this time here too, so I'm living at home with my mom. And at this point, my father was done with me. Like I said, I'm with the amount of hatred and resentment I had towards him. I mean, I did everything in my power to not be the daughter that he wanted. I mean, we got along till I hit puberty, but he really wanted this daughter that was like this little wallflower, no makeup, put a little sheet on her head and just like did like what she was told. And obviously I am not that girl. Anybody that knows me, I was not having it. So, you know, he had a right. I mean, he effectively kind of disowned me by age 22. You know, he cut all ties, cut me off financially, and him and I, we haven't spoken in 10 or 11 years now. You know, that's been a long healing process there. I'm going to get to that a little bit later. So during this time period, like I said, of going through the legal consequences, I was living at home with my parents, and I was mandated to AA. You know, at this point, again, I was continuously going to several AA meetings a week, not sober, not wanting to be sober, not doing the deal at all, no sponsor, nothing. I mean, at this point, too, with this being said, I began to live this life like I had always done, but again, I started living this life of just living a lie. I was pretending that I was sober to these recovery people over here, to the DUI courts, to my mom, when I was really in drinking and using the whole time. I became very good at faking drug screens and urine screens for the DUI court. And like I said, I literally drank and used that entire time. At this point, looking back, it is very obvious and very clear to me, I had absolutely lost the power of choice of whether I drank or not. I mean, I can look back and see that. I mean, I believe in my heart, like I was a full-blown alcoholic by 17 or 18. I mean, my experience is very clear to that. And, you know, again, through all these legal consequences, I was still living a really shady lifestyle. I was still, you know, I'm presenting to this world over here that I was sober, and I still had my party friends. I was still going out. It was not as much, but I was still going out on the weekends to doing what I wanted to do. I mean, just insanity. The way I was living my life was insane. Period. You know, and at this point too, just the sheer emotional exhaustion and just the soul sickness of living that way. I mean, there's not a more miserable way to live your life than to just be completely wholeheartedly dishonest with every single person in your life, to have no real close relationships because I'm living this lie, and I always had this overwhelming fear of being found out, and just the amount of stress, anxiety, and fear and depression. And I mean, I just kept getting sicker and sicker and sicker over the years, you know? And at this point too, through that time period, it's very clear to me, my drinking very much changed. I mean, I was still doing some of the partying stuff, but it was very obvious, really bad stuff happened when little Annie went out and got wasted, out, you know? So instead of, you know, thinking, hey, maybe I should like stop doing that, I stopped going out because bad stuff would always happen. So my drinking started being, you know, I would go to the liquor store, get vodka for the night, and I was starting to like drink myself to sleep I'd say at that age, more like 4 or 5 nights a week I was drinking. I wasn't a daily drinker yet, but I also didn't drive for like 3 years too. So I mean, my accessibility to getting other things and to go, I mean, I was a lot more limited. So I just, like I said, I my mom was there through every single step of the way with me, and I put that woman through more than, she drove my butt around for 3 years. She took me to every single DUI class, to get my drug screens, to AA meetings. I mean, I just put that woman through hell. You know, and during that time period too, I've been in school forever. I went into massage therapy school, went and got my personal training certifications during that time period. And, you know, like I said, so during that whole time, I was introduced, at this point, again, this takes me to like age 25. I was introduced to AA by age like 18. I mean, obviously just because with the DUIs and stuff like that, I was mandated with treatments and all these kind of things to come. And I had to get my little sheet signed and, you know, didn't want to be sober. Again, you know, I was supposed to be going to meetings every day for periods, but I signed my own little sheet a lot of times. So I would go to like 3 or 4 meetings a week, you know. And I sat back in these rooms for all those years, and I looked at everybody in these rooms, and I would hear people talk about a sponsor and the steps and God and a spiritual experience, and I just thought they were full of crap. honestly, I thought AA was just coming to meetings. I honestly in my heart, I don't know whether I was just too intermeshed in my own addiction and alcoholism to just see anything outside of Ann and Ann's way. I mean, that was a lot. I was so self-absorbed in just me and what I want and self-serving. You know, I was too blind and I wasn't ready. I was not ready to hear the message. But, you know, I started like hearing about steps and hear people share and it just didn't click. The bottom line is that looking back, I just wasn't done. This program for me, and it's been my experience this time around, it simply does not work unless you reach that inner, you know, it doesn't work until you reach that complete place in your heart and soul when you're alone with your own God and you realize that you cannot live a minute longer or you're going to freaking die. I mean, it just doesn't work, you know? I kind of bring it up to current. So around age 25, I met a man in these rooms at NABA. He was twice my age. We started dating. And I started working in his practice. That was about a 4 or 5 year period. With that being said, it was a dynamic that was very sick and unhealthy. I mean, that period had a large impact because, you know, it's very clear to me too, like my addiction and alcoholism manifested itself in different ways. Like I either, for example, with men, I either dated my father repeatedly. I had several boyfriends that were like exactly like my father, or I had lots of casual sexual relationships, which I'm much more comfortable with because there's no level of emotional intimacy there. Like my history with men has just been that way. And so I began this relationship with this man, which I really wouldn't recommend that. but with any life lesson, hey, Ann, maybe you shouldn't drink and drive. Like, I couldn't just, like, listen to my mommy and internalize that life lesson. I had to go out and get 4 DUIs and go through all the consequences of that to, like, learn that life lesson. So during this period of working in this job and dating this person, again, it was a very sick, unhealthy relationship. But, you know, I at this point, again, I continued this life of, you know, presenting to him and to the job and to people, you know, that I was sober when I really wasn't. And the thing is at this, through these years and at this point in my, journey, I had gotten done with the legal stuff and I convinced myself that things weren't that bad and that I wasn't that bad off because I'm a complete workaholic, overachiever, and perfectionist, right? So for being in school forever, working for these 5 years, and now I've been currently in school for nursing for the last 3 years, I've done extremely well in school. I've always excelled, like, you know, just with work and school and that kind of thing. And so I convinced myself, you know, during this time period, I stopped going out really through that whole time period, but I was drinking at home by myself every night, just vodka, you know, to a blackout, passing out. And I convinced myself that things weren't that bad because I never called in sick. I never showed up late. I worked my butt off when I was at this job. And I did well, you know, when I was there. So I really convinced myself that my drinking wasn't that bad. You know, I thought, well, you know, okay, I've gone through like a lot of this legal stuff. That's over with. You know, so now I can control and manage this area of my life. You know, it was just insanity. And it was a very incestuous situation because I went to the same meetings as this person. Basically, this person became my God. Again, I never got a sponsor, never connected with women. I made this relationship my higher power. And so works, you know, relationship, sobriety, everything was one intermeshed thing. And I hid my drinking for several years. And, you know, with that being said, again, I continued this history, which I was very good at, of just living this lie. Just this level of deep core dishonesty, telling everybody and myself, presenting to the world over here, you know, that I'm okay. You know, I became very good at, like, looking okay on the outside, you know, and just doing enough hair and makeup and acting okay. And I felt like I was just a fraud. Just a fraud. I mean, and I was. I mean, it's just, God, there is just not a more soul-sucking, miserable way to live than to constantly just be completely dishonest with every single person in your life. You know, but the thing is the idea of actually breaking down and admitting complete defeat and getting a sponsor and doing what this program requires to get and stay sober, the idea of that scared me to death. Like, the idea of actually getting honest and just revealing myself and just, like, the way what I'd been doing. I was so consumed with fear and anxiety and stress, and through this whole job and sick relationship, again, that lifestyle continued. I was irritable, restless, and discontent to the umpteenth degree. I mean, I was crazy. I was crazy, you know? And I'll just continue to be dry. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, so this brings me up to about like 4 years ago. 4 years ago, 4 years ago, this fall actually, was the last time I went to treatment. I physically at this point, because of my drinking, you know, again, I was in this relationship and job and, you know, whatever, was drinking at home every night, hiding it. I was physically getting so sick, just physically. I was distended liver. I was putting on tons of weight. My hair was falling out just as a result of my drinking. And I physically collapsed at work like 4 years ago. I was getting bruises all over my body, just physically and I was so spiritually and emotionally and just dead, just sick, and rotten and dead. And I physically collapsed at work. And they sent me to treatment. It kind of became known. Everybody knew that, you know, I was dating the boss, but I was also like supposed to be in recovery. So I went to Ridgeview. Now, mind you, this is the first time at this point, like 4 years ago, this is the first time in my whole history that I actually really in my heart, like I wanted and needed to be sober. Like it was the first time I had really, in all those years, I did not want to be sober, just did what I wanted. And it was the first time I had really reached that place in my heart where I was just like, I cannot stop drinking. I cannot stop doing this over and over and over again. I mean, the Big Book talks about it so clearly, just that cycle. I would wake up mind racing, just so full of guilt, shame, and remorse for doing the same crap the night before, getting wasted, blacking out, doing who knows what. You know, and I just swearing to myself, just being so full of self-disgust, but swearing to myself that today was going to be different. Today is the day that I'm going to stop, you know. And then, you know, lo and behold, again, it's just like every single day, my mind and that obsession would creep in. And by 3 or 4 o'clock, I started feeling better a little physically. And, you know, it's just like, well, you know, I've had a long day. I mean, it's so textbook. It's such textbook alcoholism. And I knew that. I had been to enough AA meetings. I had been to treatment enough. I knew what alcoholism looked like. But again, the book says very clearly, self-knowledge doesn't mean crap when you're an alcoholic. I had the knowledge that I was an alcoholic. I knew in every fiber of my being that I absolutely had no control whatsoever over drinking and using at all. But the problem is I didn't have the power to do anything about it. You know, and so 4 years ago, I went to Ridgeview and I went to a halfway house for like 4 months or so. Again, the problem was, is at this point, I was introduced to Primary Purpose. We are not a glum lot. I started going to some young people's meetings. I started seeing some of the faces that are in here today about 3 or 4 years ago. The problem was, is that I wanted and needed in my heart to get sober. Like I really, every fiber of my being I was so sick of living the way I was living. The problem was, is I just wasn't willing to do the work. I was not willing to get a sponsor. I was not willing to get honest with the people around me because like I said, I had been living this lie and for so many years. And I had convinced myself that there's a part in the readings that we do at the beginning where it talks about the people that are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And every time they would say that reading, it's like a dagger in my heart because I knew I was that girl. I knew I was that girl and I believed in every fiber of my being that this program would not work for me. And I joke about this, you know, in meetings and stuff when I share, but like, so 4 years ago, I went to this little halfway house treatment and I really held the belief too. And I see this in a lot of sponsees and people that kind of flop around. Now, I had this belief that the treatment would fix me or going to the halfway house would fix me. I thought that that was a sufficient solution for my alcoholism. It's not. It's not those places. And I see so clearly now, those places are there to give you a safe or to give me a safe environment so I could get introduced to AA, to get hooked up with a sponsor and start working the steps. Because that is the program of action. That is the program of AA. But so 4 years ago, I went through, and I really would not recommend this path at all. I went through three fantastic sponsors who I love dearly, who I know now currently. And I honestly picked them because they were awesome. And I thought their awesomeness would just like somehow wear off on me. And they worked solid programs, just awesome girls in the program, real solid, really busy in AA. And, you know, honestly, I wanted what they had. And I went I was so resistant to doing the steps and to this way of life. I went through three sponsors, three full sponsors. I met with them weekly. you know, they told me the stuff to do that I tell my sponsees, the stuff that I do on a daily basis, all the women and men that I see successful in this program. I call, you know, I was told to call my sponsor every day, call three other alcoholic women a day, you know, pray and meditate in the morning, get a home group, be of service, work the steps. There's very concrete actions that I do on a daily basis now that keeps me happy and sane and sober. You know, I was told those same things back then. The problem was, is that I was lying. I was lying to my sponsors. I wasn't praying and meditating. I was kind of sort of reaching out to some women. But here's the thing, reaching out to women for me doesn't mean, I was so good at saying, I'm fine, I'm good, you know, when really I'm dying on the inside. I am absolutely dying. You know, You know, so it just doesn't work. That level of dishonesty and just for me, the complete unwillingness to take the suggestions. You know, I met with three sponsors, three awesome girls, on a weekly basis. We read through the book together, paragraph by paragraph, the same way we all do it. It got up to the fourth step. I wrote an inventory. I wrote three inventories, and it was only 70% honest on them. And in a fifth step, I held on to those worst items in stock, like it says in the big book. And then we continue reading in the book, and we got all the way up to amends, and I was so terrified and so petrified and of doing amends, mainly with my father. Again, I through all these years, I was so sick and just held on to this deep-seated hatred towards them, and just complete, I would read the steps on the wall in the meetings, and I was just like, there's no way, there is no way I'm ever willing to make amends to this man, ever, you know? And so, I lied on my inventory, got up to amends, and out of fear of doing amends, I went out and got drunk or I changed sponsors three times. And again, that like takes some time. I mean, for a sponsor to meet with you weekly, to go through the book and do that, that's like 6 months. I mean, so I did this three separate times. Now, mind you, oh, yeah, by the way, too, I'm drinking this whole time. I'm not sober. Yeah, that was another thing, too, I can say. Oh, yeah, that minor fact. I was not, I was drinking here and there, you know, and again, I wasn't getting honest about it, you know. I was hiding and just internalizing that. I never picked up white chips, you know, and I kind of sort of became part of the fellowship too. That was another thing too. I thought if I hung around these meetings enough and kind of sort of maybe went to coffee occasionally with some people, I thought that would get me sober. It doesn't. From my experience, it doesn't. So again, in this last 3 or 4 year period, absolutely. And again, now also, Fifth Tradition's been my home group for about 2 years and some change now. And one of those sponsors who I love more than life itself, most of these girls know, the first 6 months of me being there, it was exactly that same situation. I started becoming friends with you guys, but I was not honest. I wasn't doing the deal. You know, I was living a lie. And, you know, and I stayed drunk. I stayed miserable. Just, the agnostic promises in the big book, you know, just we were full of fear. We were, you know, the agnostic process. I'm going blank. That was me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I had no relief from that ick I felt on the inside. And the depression and anxiety and just these feelings of failure and not being good enough just got worse and worse and worse over the years. And again, around this time period, 3 or 4 years, I started becoming extremely suicidal. I didn't have very suicidal tendencies through my addiction, meaning like I didn't, like make plans like on how to like actually go through with it. But like I absolutely wanted to die. I couldn't, the pain of living on a daily basis was getting to be just unbearable, absolutely unbearable. And you know, like I said, so 2 years and some change ago, I was introduced to Fifth Tradition and I absolutely fell in love with the group. I absolutely fell in love with the group because I saw so many women and so many people that were happy, that were living useful lives, that were doing the deal and I felt like I found my home, and that hasn't changed. There's not a minute. I am so grateful to the. I mean, for me, again, I mean, not everybody might have that experience, but for me, that 110% was my experience. You know, with finding the group, and I started to slowly become. You know, that period of time, like I said, the first 6 months, I failed miserably. You know, I was continuing to drink, and my relapse when I first came in to Fifth Tradition. It was so bad. It was a suicide attempt and a blackout, and it was a mess. But I really started to just fall in love with the people there, and I started to see hope. I started to see girls that I got sober with that came in just as broken and miserable as I was, and I saw them starting to grow and change, and their lives start to transform in this program. And, you know, So about 6 months of me going to Fit Tradition, I got a new sponsor. And at this point, though, I have a year and 10 months now. And at this point, my last relapse and the last time I drank, there was nothing, no external. I mean, at this point, I was in school for nursing, working, doing massage. I didn't lose anything externally. But I really reached that place with my drinking that, that complete and total demoralization, just that gaping hole in my soul that no amount of booze or drugs or men or anything could fix anymore, and I remember very vividly just like breaking down on my kitchen floor crying. I'd started drinking that last day, like 3 p.m. And I broke down on the kitchen floor, just bawling. And I never really had any like hatred towards God. I believe that there was something bigger than me. I believe that, I could see God working in other people's lives. I believe that there was something out there. But I had so much guilt, shame, and remorse for the way that I was living my life. I convinced myself that there's no way any God's going to want to have anything to do with me. And I didn't pray through all those years, like all these years of like trying to get sober and like getting sponsors and whatever. I absolutely never sought a relationship with a higher power ever. And I asked I remember this so vividly. I could just remember how I felt. And I asked God, I was like, please, I cannot do this shit anymore. I cannot live a moment longer in my skin. I want to die. I absolutely want to die. And at that point, at this point I was living, with my mom and stuff. And the next day I called a friend who was at Second Chance Recovery. And I had never, here's the thing though. I wanted and needed to get sober, but the bottom line was that I wasn't willing to take any action that this program requires to be and get sober. Bottom line, I wasn't willing to do anything different. And so for me, what I needed to do, and I'm so glad it's by God's grace that I made this decision, I did move to a sober living place, and it was an awesome experience. I mean, I have sponsees that are in halfway houses and claim about like halfway house drama and stuff. Like that God like put these beautiful women in my part. I mean, just the experience was awesome. I mean, I have some of the best friends from there. But what that did for me is that it was, for me, it was the first tangible action I had taken, contrary to what I wanted and how I felt on the inside. I mean, I was scared. I was scared out of my mind to move there. But it kept me in a safe environment to where I actually got a sponsor and I started getting honest for the first time in my life. And I actually started doing and taking the actions on a daily basis that I was told, back when I was 18 in my first AA meeting. I actually started calling women, I mean, there's tons of awesome women Fit Tradition. I actually started reaching out and like making plans with people and like going to the fellowship stuff. I mean, just our group, we go to dinner like 3 nights a week and there's always stuff going on. And I would go to the meeting, but I would not go to dinner out of fear of what you thought about me. Yeah, I always kept my separation between me and other people because I was so afraid. I was so consumed with self and like, obsessing about like what you thought about me, that you wouldn't approve of me, that you wouldn't like me, that you would reject me, that I stayed, away from, reaching out in the fellowship. So I started actually making some friends. But the most important key component is I finally got honest for the first time in my life with one woman. And I've never done that. I've lived such a lie and lived such a dishonest life for so many years. I just had my butt beaten enough by alcohol to where I became willing to try something different. And, I started getting honest about what I was doing and just the amount I was drinking and what was really going on. And we started meeting and going through the book, and I'd done this several times before, actually sitting down with a sponsor, reading the big book. But for the first time in my life, I did my first honest inventory ever. I told this woman everything, every single deep, dark secret that I thought I would take to my grave, that I thought that anybody, if you really knew this stuff, you would absolutely reject me. And, the obsession to drink was lifted very quickly for me, like within the first 6 months, sometime between the fourth and fifth step and starting to do my amends, the obsession to drink was lifted. And obviously in all these years that I had talked about, I mean, I absolutely thought about drinking and wanted to drink every single day of my life. I mean, there was no relief, obviously, because I wasn't working the steps and I wasn't seeking the spiritual solution. And so, I did my first honest inventory. And things started changing really quickly. All those negative feelings that I described about how I viewed the world and how I viewed you people and in my place in it, I started to feel okay in my own skin. I started to get happy. Like, I had periods of days where the thought to drink just would not enter my mind. I really started to feel a part of in our home group. You know, I started losing the fear and obsession of what you thought about me. I started to feel peace for the first time ever. You know, I started getting a taste of that my first year. But the real change, hands down for me, I had a huge long inventory. I mean, I caused a lot of damage over those years. And last summer, I did somewhere between 30 to 40 amends. I did a lot, like in a very short amount of time. I started doing amends alcoholically. It was kind of like a running joke with my friends at the time. I was doing them like three or four a week for like a 2-month period. I did a lot. I caused a lot of harm. But the thing is it was very, very clear to me at this point, if I wanted this way of life, if I wanted to be sober, if I wanted a chance of life at all, I absolutely had to do the work. And I had so much fear and anxiety and built up, stuff built up around this, you know, that I was so grateful that God placed me in a position where I became willing and ready to take the action, and it worked. Every single thing in this program, getting a sponsor, sponsoring women, doing the steps, doing amends, doing inventory, every single thing that I've done this last almost 2 years, I had so much contempt prior to an investigation. I did not want to do it. I thought it wouldn't work. I would tell you that it wouldn't work. I convinced that, you know, oh, this is going to work for you, but there's no way it's going to work for me. And absolutely every action I've taken in this program has worked. And I had so much fear, stress, and anxiety built up around doing amends and all these different things. And every single step of the way, I have not had one negative experience. Every single step of the way, it's been nothing but like rewarding, fulfilling, you know, helping to clear the wreckage of my past. And every single step that I've taken, I feel like I've built a closer relationship with God. And I never had that my whole life, ever, ever, ever. You know, I felt like there was Anne over here and her addiction, and God was somewhere over there. And again, there was this huge block, barrier. Like, I thought that he wanted nothing to do with me. And the steps started clearing away that wall, you know, and breaking it down. And, you know, so, you know, the real change, hands down for me, was amends. I mean, I had such positive, experiences with that. One main one, though, I need to talk about this. I'm going to 5 till right. Okay. So with my dad, obviously, like, I had, we still haven't spoken. It's been maybe almost 11 years. Hands down, that was like my number one resentment. I mean, honestly, the amount of hatred and resentment I had wrapped up, you know, in towards him, like, really kept me from doing the steps. Again, I just did not want to even face that. I just, you know, so my sponsor had me do a year ago. It was because at this point, again, it's been so many years since we've spoken. She had me mail a letter. And she had me write a full letter amends to him, and I mailed it. But I left it open-ended and was like, you know, I love the opportunity to be able to meet with you to, you know, do a face-to-face amends if you feel comfortable doing so. Left my contact information, you know. And I haven't heard back from him. But you know what happened? What happened in the last year or two as a result of doing that, I had so much resentment and hatred towards that man. Honestly, I can say that, like, every single ounce of that is gone. And in my heart, like, I really do love, and I feel love and compassion for him, and I feel forgiveness. And in my heart, like, I would love the opportunity one day to, like, be able to make a face-to-face amends with him. I don't know if that will happen. You know, it's in God's plan, not mine. But, you know, as a direct result of working the steps, I mean, to say that resentment's the number one offender is, like, an understatement in that particular situation. I mean, that resentment alone kept me so sick and so miserable and drunk for years. You know, just the complete unwillingness to even open my mind to the possibility that he did the best he could with what he had. And I believe that today. Like, I don't have hatred towards them. There's a deep sadness and a sorrow and a void because, I mean, it's a deep wound. You know, I wish he were a part of my life today, but he's not, you know? And if it's meant to be in God's plan that I see him one day, so be it, you know? But it's not up to me anymore. And that's the gifts of this program, to realize that, you know, I spent so much of my life trying to control and manage every single aspect of my life. You know, the people in it, and what job I got. I absolutely had no faith in any sort of God. And now, today, as a result of doing a thorough inventory, doing all those amends, and starting to sponsor, I mean, that's another thing, too. Sponsoring has been a learning curve in and of itself. You know, it was one of those, another thing in this program that I had so much fear wrapped up around, like, you know, I have nothing to offer. There's no way I can sponsor another woman. What do I have to give, you know? And again, that has been such a rewarding, awesome experience to see these women. One right there, I'm going to point you out. They have come into these rooms and start taking the action and doing the deal, and their lives transform quickly. You know, and it's just, there's not a more rewarding experience to me in this world. You know, like my sponsee that's here, I'm going to brag on her. Like 2 weeks ago, I was having an off day, just a day where I was just full of self for whatever reason. And I remember her telling me, she's like, you know, I'm doing amends. She's like, I'm going to do amends with my mom. And she's like, you know, I don't really feel like it's that big a deal because we have a good relationship. But she called me afterwards and she told me her experience and how powerful it was for her. And she changed the course of my whole day. Like, I mean, hear the impact that amends had on her and her relationship with her mom. Like, there's not a more rewarding, that just made my soul happy. It gave me goosebumps. And I was happy for the rest of the day. I don't know if I told you that. But, I mean, it's just that kind of stuff keeps happening over and over again. Now that I've gotten me out of the way, and, you know, I'm a firm believer that now, I mean, at this point, like, my life is not up to me anymore. My primary purpose in life is to continue to carry the message of AA, to continue to take the actions on a daily basis that, you know, I'm doing the same things, the same actions now I'm taking that I took at day one, you know, calling my sponsor, you know, calling other women, working with other alcoholics, meetings, service work, you know, prayer and meditation, obviously. You know, the recipe doesn't change. It's just a matter of whether I'm willing to show up and do it. And I found that on a daily basis, of course, I get miserable and crazy and my alcoholism manifests in any which way. But as long as I can continue to take the action on a daily basis, whatever crazy is in my head passes, you know, and I mean, like, for example, this summer I'm off school and I've had a lot more free time than I generally like to have, but I've stayed really busy with, like, plans with friends and recovery stuff and massages, because that's what I do, with people in the program. Like, I have a very full, busy life in AA, and it keeps me happy and it keeps me free and it keeps me out of self most of the time, you know? I don't know. I feel like I've been rambling. I think that's all I've got. Thanks for letting me share.